Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. Kinda. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we'll be doing that more regularly as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on March 25th, 2020. Just so you know, some of this information may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast is filled with South Carolina COVID-19 news and stories that matter to you, your family, and your fellow South Carolinians during this uncertain time. Each episode is structured to give you the latest news up front, followed by additional context, on-the-ground reporting from myself and South Carolina Public Radio reporters, and also your voices. Yes, we want to hear from you. Send us some voice messages. We'll give you some details in a moment. And we also have resources and tips, and we end it all with a little wind down, because we need a break. And like I mentioned, we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life, how you're doing out there, what you're doing, what projects you're accomplishing, what shows you wish you didn't start, but now you're all the way through. So leave us a message at 803-563-7169. That's right, a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169, and you might just get on the pod. And also leave your name, where you're calling from, you know, what time it is, I don't know. Just some deets. Now here's the latest on the current situation in South Carolina. COVID-19 has entered the acceleration phase according to officials at the Department of Health and Environmental Control. There have been 7 deaths, and currently there are 424 cases being reported in 39 counties as of March 25th at 4 p.m. DHEC is also out with some new modeling that projects 2,657 cases of COVID-19 by April 2nd and 8,053 by the start of May. Now, this modeling is based on case count and amplification over time, and it can be changed on measures people take. Not a worst-case scenario, but just one based on what we have right now. As for President Donald Trump's call to have the economy roaring back come Easter, well, Director Rick Toomey said they'll have to wait and see what the numbers look like. So, stop gathering at friends' houses. Stop going out unless you need to. Wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer. Sanitize surfaces you touch a lot. Come on. We gotta crack it down. Don't touch your face. And this isn't us trying to scare you, but we have a preview of what the curve can look like, guys. And if you want to lower that curve and help your friends out in the medical community and save some lives, we can do it by doing these measures and reducing the curve, flattening the curve, wash your hands, stop meeting with people. It's 2020. You can talk to on your phone to your friends face to face. I mean, come on, Jesus. And also, DHEC has a great breakdown of information on their website right now, and you can check out our show notes for this. But it shows that 43% of the cases are people under age 50. The average age of someone with COVID-19 is 52 and ranges from 9 months to 93. It's also evenly split between men and women, and about a quarter of cases were hospitalized when they reported at the time of the illness. So just a little idea about what this looks like right now. Schools will remain closed through the month of April, according to Governor Henry McMaster and State Superintendent of Education Molly Spearman. Let's get local. The biggest cities in South Carolina have taken some of the biggest actions to date to fight COVID-19. Columbia and now Greenville have curfews in effect starting at 11 p.m. until 6 a.m., and the Charleston City Council is the first to implement a stay-at-home order for the next 14 days, which closes non-essential stores, businesses, playgrounds, parks, and city buildings in the city. Mayor John Tecklenburg spoke about the need for the dramatic action during a Tuesday press conference.
First, there's the fact that our state public health agency, DHEC, has now officially told us that the coronavirus pandemic is in the acceleration phase in our state. This means that there is significant community spread and that we've entered the period of maximum danger for our citizens with infection rates and deaths due to this disease set to rise exponentially. Second, there's a simple fact of population density. 3 of the 4 largest cities in our state sit side by side here in the Lowcountry, with a total population in the hundreds of thousands. We cannot and must not allow this deadly, highly contagious disease to spread uncontrolled amongst our residents. And finally, there are the numbers with regards to the disease itself. Modeling at both Columbia University and here locally shows that Charleston is facing thousands of deaths, most of them unnecessary, if we don't stop the spread of the virus and prevent our local hospital systems from being overwhelmed. And that's beginning to occur. This moment, with the pandemic still in its earliest part of the acceleration phase, is our last and best chance to keep tragedy from happening here in the city of Charleston.
This won't apply to places like grocery stores, banks, the doctor's office, pharmacies, or gas stations. There is no such order for the state, so you guys know, though the governor has said all options remain on the table to combat the spread of COVID-19. Now let's switch gears to Washington. So senators and the White House have struck a deal on the nearly $2 trillion stimulus bill. Now, they haven't voted on it yet as of our taping, but this bill includes $1,200 checks for certain Americans, a $500 billion stimulus for cities and states and industries like the airlines, a $367 billion loan program for small businesses, $130 billion for hospitals, and $150 billion for state stimulus, and also money for unemployment benefits. But the stimulus bill hit a big snag on Wednesday when several Republican senators, including Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham, who hours before praised the bill from the Senate floor, issued warnings about incentivizing low-wage worker layoffs, since the stimulus bill would provide $600 in additional unemployment relief. Instead, the amendment they want to introduce to the bill would limit unemployment benefits to 100% of a worker's salary. Here's Graham at a press conference Wednesday afternoon.
Under this proposal that they agreed to last night, on unemployment, you would be making $24.07 an hour in South Carolina. There are a lot of jobs in South Carolina that do not pay $24.07. I've been one of the biggest advocates of helping the unemployment insurance system as part of a relief package. The maximum benefit was $326. My goal was to add some federal dollars to the pot to get you back to what you were making with a cap of $600, which is an income of about $49,000. This bill pays you more not to work than if you were working. Very few people are going to turn down a 24-hour dollar deal not to work, to work for 15. The problem for employers is that you've been put out of business because of containment policies that I think will continue aggressively for a while. What do you tell an employee if you own a restaurant or bar in Myrtle Beach? Or are you going to say, let me put you on the payroll at your salary of $15 an hour? Or are you going to say, go to the unemployment office and sign up for unemployment, get as much as you can. I know you want the money, you need the money, and there'll be a job waiting on you.
The Senate eventually came to an agreement around 1:30 in the morning on Wednesday. And as of our taping, like I said, this vote is forthcoming. But Wall Street was happy ahead of this news on Tuesday, and the Dow saw its biggest daily gain since 1933. And just so you know, we'll have an update in our weekend pod that'll be forthcoming. So stay tuned, subscribe. We'll have the latest for you when it happens. So maybe this is not the best time to tell you that I was not a great econ student, but I do love the stock market. Can't wait for that government check so I can get some legalized gambling going on Wall Street. But let's get into some real important economic news right now. On Monday, the Federal Reserve announced plans to boost the flow of credit to employers, consumers, and businesses by establishing new programs that, taken together, will provide up to $300 billion in new financing. The Department of Treasury also kicked in about $30 billion to these lending facilities. Now, this is important news for small businesses. The Fed also expects to announce the establishment of a Main Street Business Lending Program to support lending to eligible small and medium-sized businesses, which complements the efforts by the Small Business Administration. So more news to stay tuned for. And speaking of the Fed, there are 12 Federal Reserve banks that make up the Federal Reserve System, known as the Fed. The 5th District of the Federal Reserve is headquartered in Richmond and encompasses several states, including the Carolinas. Now, I say all this to introduce Bank President Tom Barkin, who recently sat down with Chris William, who's host of the Carolina Business Review on UNC TV, to talk about the effects of monetary policy. And Barkin says the country is facing a different problem, a health problem versus the 2008 crisis when the pillars of the financial system were struggling during the Great Recession. So this is different. And here's a good piece of him talking about how this affects small businesses.
Let's say I own a restaurant. And I've talked to some restaurateurs who are like this. Well, they try the takeout thing, but that's pretty hard to make the economics work on takeout. So, you know, they have a sad day and they tell their employees, you know, it's just going to be a month or two. We want you back. And they let them go. Most of these owners are individual business people. Their restaurant is their income. They have some savings, so they themselves can make it another, you know, month or two or three. They don't have a lot of debt because the banks don't actually like lending to restaurants. Yeah. They do have a mortgage, right? Or they have rent payments. And so one of the first things they're going to do is go talk to their lessor. Right now, the folks on the other side of that are a mix of people. There are people who, you know, 2 to 3 months is not a big deal. And they have people who are highly levered and feel like it's going to hit them in turn. But the thing for sure is they're not going to be able to release that space in a couple month basis. So there's nobody out there trying to find that space in this environment.
Does the Fed encourage the banks that hold that debt to be compassionate? Is probably not a technical term, but to be compassionate, forgiving on the loan to some degree?
We have, but again, there aren't a lot of banks in this debt. This is more
Even on the mortgage on the side.
Oh, sure. And as I hear from banks, I do hear, you know, thousands of stories of individuals coming back for some sort of relief and the banks giving them that sort of relief. Mm-hmm. I think if you've got a healthy business and it's a couple month thing, there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think the challenge, this is where I come back to the public health side of this. The challenge is, what if it's not a couple months? What if it's all summer? What if it's longer? Mm-hmm. And then I think you really will have people making choices to exit.
Just like Richmond Fed Chief Tom Barkin, State Treasurer Curtis Loftus says the state is better positioned fiscally heading into this crisis than it was in 2008. Though Loftus did tell Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review that the already underfunded state pension fund will take some hits due to its equity exposure.
Well, of course, it's serious for everything and everybody, and I know you share that same view. In 2008, we weren't nearly as prepared for what was coming down the pipe. South Carolina learned a lot from that. Governor Haley met with the budget writers, and they were able to repair that bankrupt unemployment fund. It now has well over $1 billion in it. And in fact, it's kind of on the border being overfunded. And that's exactly where we wanted, because we all knew something else was going to come along. So I'm very proud about that. I think the budget writers learned a lot. You know, we have both of our state's reserve funds have been fully funded now for years. So again, I think people can feel as good as possible about how the state's been managing their money. Nobody's ever prepared for an outsized event like this one, but we're in such a better place than most states.
And I guess a lot of that is attributable to the fact that we're 10 years into a very nice economic recovery that, of course, now is ending.
That's right. But there were some hard lessons learned. You know, after the 2008 crisis, the General Assembly and then the Budget and Control Board went into state agencies and had to cut programs during the middle of the year. We had to reclaim funds. And that was a painful event for everybody. And, of course, the taxpayers as well. We learned from that. And that's not going to have to happen, we hope, this time. So the state is in a much better position. We've got better reserves. We've been very fortunate these last few years have been very good years for the state. We're as well positioned as possible to weather the storm.
Now, you might remember from our last episode when Victoria Hansen had that dire report on the restaurant bar scene in Charleston. And just to follow up on that, the Post and Courier reports on lodging in the county and finds that at least 28 hotels have suspended operations in Charleston County. Many hotels are operating with occupancy rates under 15%. Compare that with 85% in March 2019. And to follow up with that, it was just announced that the Spoleto Festival that would take place in May has been canceled. Sewers and sewing enthusiasts around the state, country, and world are taking the medical mask shortage head-on and have taken to their sewing machines. Handmade surgical masks made of spare cotton fabric are providing medical professionals with another layer of defense against COVID-19. These surgical masks can be washed and reused when an N95 respirator isn't available or can help extend the lifespan of those masks. I caught up with Savannah Etheridge and Jensen Ronk in Florence, where the two have made over 102 masks over the past weekend alone, just with scraps of fabric from their side job of making boutique-quality dresses for girls. I met the two at Jensen's house, where she was at work behind her sewing machine, while Savannah addressed envelopes for the masks that they were sending out across the country. And just so you can tell who is who, Savannah is from Hartsville, and Jensen is originally from Ohio. And she also noticed my out-of-state accent, too.
We each got a text from a friend. Hers was a nurse asking if we had were making masks or if we could make them a mask, and that's what made it all come about, really, was the people asking. And then when we made the post, it was really just to show, like, oh, we can make you a mask, thinking, like I said,
a couple people,
somebody. And then it was like hundreds of comments or messages, and then it just puts it into perspective, and we were like, okay, well, we're gonna get to work.
We were definitely shocked by the need. I mean, everybody needs one. We've had hundreds of people comment, text, call, message our private page, people we don't even know, just saying, hey, can I please have one? Can I please have one for my brother, for my sister, just anybody they know, that they think needs one, they want one. And I mean, we're trying our best to get them all out. It's all scrap fabric that we've had from our business, so we're trying to do them for free.
That's the
as long
thing.
As we can, we're gonna make them. They take about 12 minutes, so it's not that bad, but when you're doing hundreds, the time definitely adds up. So
that's why I feel so bad when people are like, we'll pay you to make it, and it's not
that at all.
It's, unfortunately, it's the time, which I think that we've done really great for just it being a weekend. And I know we'll make them as long as we can.
We want to do whatever we can, and this is the easy way for us to do it because we're normally sewing every day anyway.
And for me personally, I have health issues, so doctors and nurses are extremely important to me. So I was like, I'll definitely make masks as long as I can, and hopefully it can make at least a difference for the people that actually get one. You know what I mean? And then their family, if it helps them not bring home germs.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention calls homemade masks a last resort since they are not considered personal protective equipment and their capability to protect workers is relatively unknown. But it's better than doing nothing or just a bandana, as they've recommended. And Savannah and Jensen are not charging for their masks right now. They're just doing this with donated fabric as they get it. And you can find them, the masks, and the dress that they make on their Facebook page, Stitched Down South. And there's also a Facebook group up in Greenville called Sew Some Good Greenville. Here's a bit of a medical update on South Carolina, and stick around for some information on coping with self-isolation. South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan reports that 12 of South Carolina's 46 counties have no intensive care unit beds. This, according to a report released by the Kaiser Family Foundation, that looks into the ratio of Americans aged 60 or older to ICU beds. The counties have a combined population of 542,000, with a little more than a quarter of those residents being 60 or older. But more than 1,000 hospital beds have been freed up statewide, Governor Henry McMaster said this week.
Here's some facts. According to the South Carolina Medical Association, the South Carolina Hospital Association, you recall we asked to move those people out, put off elective surgery if it's not urgent, to go ahead and put that off to leave the beds available for those who may be coming in as a result of the virus. Well, today there are 56% more vacant hospital beds today than were when I asked the hospital to suspend those elective procedures last Tuesday afternoon. What that means is that there are 1,819 more beds available to handle that than there were 6 days ago. And we're also working with the National Guard, with Fort Jackson, General Beagle, with others to find places that we can use as an overflow for the hospitals in order to bring the virus patients that need isolation into the hospitals.
Now, I know this is a lot to take in, and it can make anyone anxious. I mean, you're not alone here. We're all feeling it. And according to an Axios Ipsos coronavirus index, yeah, that exists, guys. Welcome to March 2020. 43% of people say that their emotional well-being has gotten worse in the last week. That's up from 29% the week before. How do you feel from last week to the week before? You guys, leave us a message. And that's probably because the survey saw big jumps in people being furloughed and also a tripling of people self-quarantining. Whew. So, fear and anxiety is part of the normal response to this situation. Plenty of things can cause fear, including misinformation and rumors. So technically, this podcast is fighting fear because we're giving you the facts, which are important, according to Aisha Malik, a mental health expert at the World Health Organization. She was on YouTube with some great advice for those who are self-isolating.
We advocate very heavily around social support being very good for your mental health. But the idea of isolation or quarantine means that that can be a little bit limited. That's not always the case. It could be that you're self-isolating at home, but you've still got other family members or friends in the house, or that you're in quarantine and that there are other people that might be accessible to you. If possible, keep maintaining your social contacts within reason, if in person, according to the health guidance of your country. Otherwise, if you have this accessible to you, digital methods of communication or even phone is a really good way to keep maintaining your social contact. And it's something in particular to think about with adolescents during this time. Now, when you're in isolation, another important thing to do is still to continue, if possible, maintaining your routines to maintain a sense of normality. And when I say maintaining routines, this is because it includes self-care strategies. So you're eating well, trying to make sure you get enough rest and sleep, and trying to get physical activity as well. So these are all things that you can do when you're in isolation, and also activities that stimulate your mind or that are what we call cognitively stimulating can be quite good as well. So a number of different simple actions that you can take to help minimize stress during that time. So during a situation like this, and it very much depends on the situation in your own community.
So we have a link to that video, and we also have some more resources in our show notes from the Department of Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Services, DAOTIS. Because this is a difficult time for folks dealing with substance abuse or those overcoming it. Also, be aware that during these difficult times and being in isolation can allow domestic violence and child abuse to occur at higher rates and can happen in the shadows. So be vigilant with your friends and family. Yes, we need to social distance, but be wary of odd excuses. Be sure to keep in contact and push for face-to-face contact if possible. Sometimes just being reliable, trusting, and understanding are the most important things you can do. And if you suspect domestic violence or if you're in a domestic violence situation, call 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-7233, or of course 911 if it is an emergency. You can also find more information on nonprofits in your area that can help you leave a terrible situation. We know it's not easy, but it could be the difference between your life or your child's life. More resources are available at sccadvasa.org. And that will be in our show notes. So it's our wind down section, and I want to talk to you about a recent trip I took to Publix, my neighborhood grocery store, to grab some eggs. Yes, I say eggs weird, everyone just deal with it. And then I did that because Costco has been a little hit or miss these days, which is kind of crazy considering they have like a palette of them. So AT, can you hit that sweet, sweet, soothing grocery store music and sound? And if you listen really closely, you can hear some sweet, soothing Amy Grant in the background. That's the adult contemporary music that's going to get us through this. And, you know, if you need to, you know, put the Steve Winwood on, because, boy, is that good. The finer things? Again, a reminder, no need to panic buy, folks. Even though there, you know, there might be some shortages here and there, there's no real need to do that because the food's on the way, everything's moving and grooving, just be patient. Even though some gas station cashier told me on Sunday that it was the last day to stock up, whatever the hell that meant, because that wasn't the case. But again, just shop smart and get what you need. But since you're going to the grocery store, you're running errands, I don't want you to be overly worried about contracting COVID-19 while shopping. And state epidemiologist Dr. Lena Bell actually addressed this concern the other day. Here's what she had to say.
We have received several questions about concerns related to shopping at grocery stores and other public settings. You should know that the transmission of the illness requires significant close contact with an individual who's ill. Brief contact in public settings, like the grocery store, is not considered a high-risk exposure for all those who are present in that setting. We don't want to cause unnecessary alarm or demand on our healthcare systems by making notifications of these public places where cases have been. DHEC would advise no additional measures for anyone who's been present in general in one of these public settings, beyond what we have been recommending for communities in general. Everyone should monitor for symptoms, practice social distancing, avoid touching frequently touched surfaces like doorknobs and handrails, and regularly wash your hands. And always, after being in a public place, wash your hands.
Solid news you can use right there. When you feel a little jittery when you see people in gloves or masks, you know, just keep your distance, keep your hand sanitizer handy, and don't touch your face. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you, get a laugh or two. And to do that, we need you to call us at 803-563-7169 and tell us how you're coping with this, what you're doing, some moments of levity, some challenges. We're here for you. So again, give us a call, leave us a voicemail, about a 1 minute long voicemail, 803-563-7169. And do we have any calls? Have we got some calls?
We got some solid calls. We got some good stuff.
All right. Awesome. Great to hear that people are calling in. Let's check out the call.
Let's roll it.
Let's roll the tape.
AT and Gavin, I'm isolating with my 2-year-old daughter somewhere on the Grand Strand. Our curriculum is potty training and transitioning from a crib to a bed. Recently, my daughter, Clara, has learned to open doors like a velociraptor in Jurassic Park. The change of pace certainly has helped me slow down my parenting. For this, I'm grateful. I'm on sabbatical from teaching high school English, so a lot of my time not parenting goes towards professional development, reading, online courses. Something I'm thinking a lot about now is how we are all participating in a global online learning experiment, and I'm on the sidelines watching it happen. What will the consequences be of all this online learning? Especially, I'm interested in what will the unintended consequences be. Thank you for deftly transitioning from primary to pandemic. I look forward to your show and Trail Bites every week. You guys, your team, and all of the friends that you have that come in on the show from the papers around the state are a major South Carolina news source for us, and we so appreciate your service. Keep calm and wash your hands.
Thanks for calling us, Mr. Grandstrand. I wish we had your name, but we'll just call you Mr. Grandstrand. Sounds like a lot going on, but we appreciate you. And AT, what's new in your self-isolation world?
Oh, wow. I don't know, man. So much forge and fire, like I said last time. A lot of cooking. I'm going to cook a lot of Lebanese food because, you know, I'm one of those boys.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And I'm going to read a lot. A lot of reading. And I suggest Dune by Frank Herbert. Great, great book. You can look it up. George Lucas actually stole Star Wars from him. So, yeah, much better than Star Wars. Suck it, nerds. What are you doing, Gavin?
I've been keeping busy. Luckily, I've been able to run around and keep up with this story. But, you know, obviously when I'm having some free time, I keep my routine. I've been on the home workouts are fun. I love the Peloton. I know you don't care about Peloton, but they have the free workouts. It's great. So a lot of body weight core exercises. I don't have weights at home because I used to go to a gym. Remember?
You're going to have an 8-pack.
Yeah. Especially because I'm lifting a 20-pound bag of rice. That's my workout. Yeah. Don't laugh. You're going to want some of that rice one of these days.
Yeah. My sweaty, sweaty rice.
But I know Tiger King is on Netflix. It came out 5 days ago.
I haven't watched it yet.
We'll have to watch it together.
It is happening, though.
Which, in quarantine time, that was like 5 months ago. People are going to listen. They're like, you haven't heard about Tiger King? I'm like, hey, things have been happening, folks.
I don't know who he is. He looks awesome.
It looks wild. Yeah. I watched the trailer. We'll have to do the Netflix party thing where we can type, because I did that last night. We'll have some audio of that for Friday's episode. But, yeah, the day we live in. So, yeah, let us know if you watch Tiger King. Give us a call on our hotline. The line's always open.
It's a Tiger King.
We got operators standing by 24/7, 803-563-7169. Tell us about the worst movies you're watching, because we want to know so we can avoid them or maybe watch them.
I watched Spencer yesterday with Mark Wahlberg. really, really bad. So you got a stamp of approval right there. Go watch it. It's garbage.
The race to the bottom of Netflix continues. And don't forget to check out our show notes because we have great links to the things that we talked about during the show and also some resources. And this was a great, another important pod that we had. Plenty of stuff and more on the way. Stay tuned with us. Subscribe to others about the podcast. Give us a review. Let us know how we're doing because we want to keep you informed as much as possible and cut through all that, you know, all that news. And there's a lot of national news out there, but we want to give you just the South Carolina story. And speaking of the news, walk away from it every now and then. Maybe tune in to the governor's press conference. It happens about every other day on ETV channels and platforms. You can check it out. We always recap it here. And again, you know, we're here for you, our lead community, throughout this situation as it continues to develop. We are in full scale, hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.